On this episode of IT AV, we take a look at the ecosystems evolving within the AV industry and how they've come from the IT sector. Also take a look at ransomware and whether or not your network is at risk. All that and more next on IT AV.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is IT AV, episode 31, recorded Monday, July 1st, 2019. Ecosystems.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Kramer, AV Beyond the Box.
This is IT AV, the monthly look at how the IT and the AV industries kind of go together. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host. With me to discuss the stories we've gathered for this month, first and foremost, his name is Bradford Ben. He is from AV Nation, but also works with an end user. Welcome, sir.
Good to have me here, Tim. It's your pleasure, as always, to see me.
Yes, sir. Also with us is Mr. Michael Drainer. Michael is from Drainer Technologies. Welcome, sir.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for having me today. Good to see you.
Absolutely. All right, guys. First story actually comes to us from Infocom and the AVAPAC.net. Publication covers the AV industry for Asia Pacific. But actually, the gentleman who wrote the piece, Christopher Holder, wrote about a presentation made by QSC's Joe Pham during the show. Joe stepped away from the booth and did a presentation for a number of folks Wednesday of the show, talking about the next steps for AV. And I'm going to read a small snippet here. Quote unquote, Joe insists that products need to reside within a platform, and a platform, thanks to software, can bring products together in a cogent manner. What's more, you need to choose an ecosystem where platforms can coalesce. Think iOS or Android. This is not anything new, really, that if you've been paying attention to what QSC has been doing over the last 2 or 3 years, QSC has been moving to a platform. I want to say it was about 2 years ago, they announced for the first time that their QSC, the QSIS systems could be deployed on a just off-the-shelf Dell server. They're moving to a platform-based ecosystem as far as their stuff goes. Joe, in the presentation, makes the argument that this is kind of where the AV industry is going. I find it interesting that, coupled with actually a story that we covered on AV Week last week, a programmer wrote an article about how software was eating AV, making the argument that, you know, as an industry, we're going to this software-based platform. Bradford, I'm going to start with you because not only do you work for an end user, but you also worked for a manufacturer for a number of years. As you sit in the industry that you've been a part of for a number of years, is this accurate? Are we heading towards a platform ecosystem?
Yes and no. And also, in full disclosure, I was in that panel. I heard Joe talk about it. I traded a couple emails with him about it afterwards. My overarching statement is 80% of the world and 80% of the AV market will be using an ecosystem. And then there's the 20% that does not match the ecosystems as defined. I'll use what I do for my employer, including putting in my standard disclaimer. These are my personal opinions. I'm not speaking on behalf of anyone, including my employer. These are just my opinions from years in the industry. But what I do, it's not going to be an ecosystem. We've tried. We have looked at major manufacturers in the past. But what we do is unique enough. It does not work at the moment. And that's a fine business decision. If someone was to just come after the large venue and theme parks and those high-end products, it's a very difficult market to sustain because there are 4 and 5 year lead times. You look at a stadium project like the Raiders moving to Vegas, that's a 3 or 4 year project. That's not going to fit the ecosystem or the ecosystem just because of the way the project works. You look at a conference room, those are cookie cutter enough and have enough similarities to work within one confined ecosystem or ecosystem. So I think Joe has some points there, and it's been one of the reasons QFC has been successful. They have a very good ecosystem. You compare that with some of the other brands out there, including, you know, Harman, they have a good ecosystem as well, and it works really well. In touring, not as great in some other markets. But I do think Joe's point is true of we are going to look at creating entire ecosystems that's going to become a software solution more than hardware. And to me, that's just knowing the situation of the world. Previously, Apple was not the first MP3 player. They happened to make the best MP3 player software and software controller and interface. And that's where I think the ecosystem is going to come about. Of it might be that QFC has hooks because of Lua scripting that can give you one interface that controls other things, and that might make it the ecosystem. It could be an Alcorn McBride system that has a V16 controller that can control other things and make it look like it's one ecosystem. I do agree it's going to become one interface to the user, but other than, and I hate to say, the mainstream products, which is houses of worship that are below 2,500 seats, conference rooms, classrooms, auditoriums below 500 seats. There's too many unique challenges in each one to be able to just deploy the same thing over and over. And I think that's where software needs to be more flexible than some of the ecosystems can allow. But like I said, that's personal opinion based on what I've been dealing with for the past 20 plus years of large systems.
Help me understand for a second. You said that the ecosystems aren't necessarily geared or engineered for larger deployments. You mentioned the Raider, which is going up currently. Is it because of the lead time? The technology is not here yet today, or maybe it is here, but they've got to prepare for something that's going to happen in 3 years, and so they need something that's a little more stable. Or maybe not necessarily stable, but more fleshed out. In other words, it's been around longer. Or is it simply because of the scale of something like, use the Raiders stadium for an example?
I think it's a combination of a couple things. One, there were times I had to, when I was at Harman, we developed new technology and new software to meet a project because we had that long of a lead time. But the other thing is, because they're 3-year lead times, that's not necessarily enough to sustain a business by going after that market. Because, you know, yes, there were brand new NFL stadiums for years, and then it's kind of slowed down a little bit. And there'll be another boom in probably 10 to 15 years where there'll be another batch of stadiums. But that's not enough to sustain people just from a straight business standpoint. They're going to go for 80% of the market. And stadiums, because of their complexity and their size, are going to be that 20%. You know, I'll use the example of a restaurant and retail space. All these stadiums have luxury suites and luxury restaurants. Those are restaurant and retail spaces. But how often do you put 20 of them together to form one big system that's then tied into one huge bowl PA that has all of that, that you're then going to tie in the display board or, you know, the scoreboard feed, as well as commercials, as well as national TV fallback into those stadiums and into those suites. That's not something a typical use case would be. Now, I can easily do that using a QSIS core, using a SoundWeb, using an AMX switcher, using an Extron switcher, and I can design that system, but there's very little chance I'm going to find a system off the shelf that will do all of those tasks. Now, if I'm Joe Way and I'm doing AV as a solution, you know, and I'm doing 50 conference rooms or 50 classrooms that all have a laptop, a smart board, and the video and a document camera. Oh, I can do that as an ecosystem day after day, but I can't do that for things like football stadiums and the unique experiences that we talk a whole bunch about. Could you imagine doing a one-off for something like the Orange County Convention Center? It's over 1 million square feet. that's not going to be, just dial up, room combining 101 and it'll work, because, knowing how many inputs and outputs there are, it's going to be multiple products no matter what you use.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Michael, you were not at Infocom, but based on the article and what Bradford and I have talked about, where do you see this as a viable future for AV, where we are moving into the ecosystems?
I completely understand where Bradford's coming from, but I see another side of this coin, and kind of the spirit of what Joe is saying. Think about the term software-defined AV. Right, we have software-defined networking today. We can define computing resources and software with things like OpenStack and cloud platforms. And it really comes down to the ubiquity of hardware. That hardware is not really the focus here. It's function, it's form, it is user experience and the UX design. And so as we can bring the infrastructure components of the AV system into a world where we can define them through software, then that allows that scalability in those large environments as well as in these small environments. And I think that's kind of the spirit of where Joe is going with this, is that when we move to more of a software-defined ecosystem, then all we need is on-ramps and off-ramps. The rest of it all happens in the back end, right? You spend some good quality time on the UX, and Bradford's right. That takes a tremendous amount of time to lay out and design, even from a hardware standpoint, as well as a software perspective. But the software affords you the flexibility of dealing with those long time horizons and the ability to have an upgrade path as you get closer to the project without necessarily having to gut the entire project to get things up to current technology. So I see both sides of that coin. If a manufacturer's not thinking ecosystem, not thinking platform, they're going to run into some problems in the future, because the 80%ers are moving this direction. They're moving into the software-defined AV world, and that's just the path of least resistance right now for the industry, because that's where technology as a whole is moving. And I think there's even been a reference in the article about that 20% manufacturer that are just those subcomponents. If you think you're going to make a living long term, just making a small problem solver, you may do okay for a while. But as soon as that problem can move into the software space to be resolved, you cease to exist. So you've got to be thinking platform mindset if you're going to be successful in the future of AV.
So then, as a manufacturer, if you do identify a problem, and you develop let's call it the hardware side of that, the hardware solution, should you then also either concurrently or after the product's been released, basically start working yourself into obsolescence and working on the software side?
Absolutely. I mean, let's take this back about a decade or so, and think about AEC. Right, when we all started in the business, acoustic echo cancellation was something that was a hardware component. It lived on a card. Where is it today? It's an algorithm in a DSP. And now with what QSC is doing, it sits on a server, right? In a Linux OS. It's not even in a DSP at this stage of the game. So with the ubiquity of high processing power, software-defined networking, and the ability to solve complex calculations in software, a lot of these hardware problem solvers are going to cease to exist. Once you can on-ramp the media to the network, then we can deal with it in any number of ways that make the most sense.
All right, very good. Next article here comes to us actually from a very cool website called bleepingcomputer.com. Not a funny story, though. There were two separate Florida cities in the last month that have been subject to a ransomware attack, both the city of Lake City and Riviera Beach, both in Florida. They both agreed to pay combined over $1 million in ransomware. Riviera Beach actually voted to spend $600,000 to get their systems back up, and as opposed to spending $1 million to completely replace their entire infrastructure, including computers and switches. Michael, I'm going to start with you. You deal a lot with this when it comes to your customers in the IT space. The first question is, how do we prevent this, or maybe we can't prevent ransomware attacks from happening, but how do we safeguard against this? And the second part of the question is, are AV systems susceptible to this?
Okay, so first of all, you probably couldn't see me just a moment ago shaking my head with this. This is not a funny story. This is a very, very, very serious matter. What I'm shaking my head about is the fact, if you read through this article, it says that the city had no backup. How, in this day and age, how can you not have a backup? That, I mean, that is first and foremost. I don't understand that. It is not an expensive insurance policy to protect your data. So you asked the question, how do you prevent ransomware? Number one, you don't.
Define expensive and not expensive. I mean, how much roughly?
That's hard to say depending on how much data they had. But when you look at the fact that, you know, it was $600,000 or $1 million to recover this, you can back up an entire server cluster for $2,000 a year. Right? $5,000 a year, depending on what your scope is, how much hardware you're talking. I mean, you're talking tens of thousands of dollars at the most in a 12-month period. You're not looking at millions. So the ROI is so far out. So let me go back to your question. It was, how do you prevent ransomware? One, you don't. You educate, you reduce. You try to mitigate your attack vectors and bring the attack surface down so that you minimize the risk of obtaining ransomware. So that's the first step. But the second step is a good, tested, proven backup solution, which is something that this city did not have. And I guarantee you, when they're all done with this, they're going to spend a lot of money redoing their infrastructure. They're going to pay some high-dollar consultant to come in and tell them that they need a backup. And, you know, folks, here's the thing. Is AV susceptible? Yes, it is. We're all susceptible, every single one of us. Back up your data and not just copy it to a cloud share. You need to have multiple copies in multiple formats so that your data is protected. We've done several episodes here on the ITAV show about backup and data recovery. In fact, we had a situation here at the AV Nation Studios where we had a data loss event and we were able to recover fairly quick. Tim wasn't even aware that there was an issue because we were able to fully recover quickly and efficiently. It is not expensive to do in the grand scheme of things. And if you're running such a tight budget that you cannot afford to back up your data, you might as well close your doors now because it's just a matter of time until the hackers do it for you.
All right, Mr. Bradford, when it comes to, you know, ransomware, how would you advise an AV integrator making sure that both their systems internally, in other words, their offices are protected, but also the systems that they put in place, you know, that they have contingencies in case one of their systems or one of their networks is compromised?
So to Michael's point, yes, backup. Backup is good. Backup is really good. However, what happens if you back up the malware? And that's the thing that a lot of people kind of forget in this. So I also believe in having scan software. There's all different brands out there. I'm not going to try to tell you which is the right one or the wrong one just because, well, it's kind of like picking, you know, anything else. Is it Microsoft? Is it Mac? Is it Linux? Is it Ubuntu? Is it Red Hat? There are so many different flavors to talk about. There are some who say, if you create your data on a Windows machine, store it on an Ubuntu machine, because that way the malware won't cross. That may or may not be true. The other thing is, while everyone's looking at the malware and what it can do to the data, even if you had all of the information, what happens if the malware goes after, oh, your network switch? Or as has been talked about, some of your AV devices, such as displays, goes after some of that directly and not actually after your computer. And that's a whole nother issue to look at. So I think it's a combination of two things, backup, but also how do we come back from disaster recovery starting anew instead of fixing what we have? Because I hate to say it, sometimes it's better to nuke and pave than it is to try to fix everything, especially if you look at the time. Now, at some of these cities that have been hit by ransomware or malware, you don't have that opportunity because you can't turn the city off for 4 hours and then turn it back on. You can't turn a hospital off.
But they
for
have
4 hours.
That's the thing. Hang on. They've had to. It was a city in Maryland that could not do business.
Right. And yes. But see, what Bradford's saying is absolutely right with that. So you know, we're talking about backup because this city had no backup. Like that is the most fundamental piece of this. But there's a whole business continuity and disaster recovery piece of this as well that goes into the equation. And if you're not thinking about business continuity as part of your overall disaster and backup contingency planning, then you're missing the boat, right? And I think my point was, this should not have happened, right? This city, there's no excuse for this occurring. Now, if they were down for a period of time while they're working to recover, that's a whole nother question about business continuity and disaster recovery planning and things like that. But they have nothing to recover. And I think that's the point here is, yes, can malware and ransomware lurk in your backups? And yes, they can. And a good backup solution will scan for that stuff. Now, will it catch 100%? No. But you're going to be able to go back to a point in time where you're going to be able to recover a certain amount of your information and be able to mitigate some of those damages.
And the example I'll use is, you know, I have my computer. It has my software. It's configured the way I like it. Guess what happens if that computer fails? I will not spend hours going to fix it.
Nope.
If I'm in a critical path like business continuity, I will pull out my credit card and I will make sure it's the AV Nation credit card and I will go buy a new laptop and yep. put my software back on it and restore what I need from a backup and be back up and running. And business continuity goes in with under an hour of downtime. And most of that is spent deciding whether or not I want the 13-inch or the 15-inch and stuff like that. Now, I'm being somewhat facetious in this, but I've done this for airports before.
Yep.
When I was working at Harman, you know, we were supporting airports, and I literally could deploy Microsoft Server and Microsoft SQL Server in under an hour and get a server back up and running and bring over the data, rather than sitting there and troubleshooting why did the other one break, because that was the faster path. Now, we all laughed about when IT goes, oh, I'm just going to nuke and pave and reformat your computer. There's a certain validity to it of, is it worth me spending 15, 20 hours to get my computer back, or just doing the, I have all the data I need, I have all my license keys kept elsewhere, format C:?
It's the path of least resistance. It is.
Yeah.
And it's the most expedient path in many cases. Because you're right. You could spend hours and hours and hours and really rack up the bill trying to troubleshoot what occurred. And sometimes that's important to know what happened so that you can put preventative measures in place so it doesn't happen again. But you also, you're balancing that against the continuity needs of maintaining business operations. And that's where a decision and a judgment has to be made.
And that's where the malware issue became critical path.
Yep.
Because they had no business continuity plan. Their backup didn't work. Now, this is going to sound bad because it is Florida. Be glad it was malware and not a hurricane. Because could you imagine all of this stuff stopping working in the middle of a natural disaster? So while we're talking about malware, let's talk about other applications where AV is critical. Command and control centers in a hurricane, command and control centers in an earthquake, command and control centers during a tornado, locusts, frogs, flies, pestilence, all of those things.
It's biblical proportions, dogs and cats living together.
Necessary.
But that is an important thing of the, you know, how do you continue if you get hit by malware? And I know this sounds like we're making fun of the state of Florida for having these problems, but this is not just a Florida problem. This just happens to be the one that raised its head. Atlanta has had this problem. Mm-hmm. New York City had a problem with GPS midnight, which for those of you who aren't familiar, every 20 years, the GPS clock starts over, which means all of your master timing signals for a lot of network systems start over. And if you don't put in the proper code like Y2K, guess what happens to all your systems? Well, New York City is still dealing with that. And that's not malware. That's programmer error and failed to patch an update. Mm-hmm. What's the exact same thing of how do we continue to operate the city? And that was not malware. That was warned of people, but has the exact same effect. And that's why the backups and business continuity is so important. Because at some point, you can't go, hang on a second, stop bleeding. Just wait, and I'll get you an ambulance in like 15 minutes once the computer reboots.
Well, I mean, Bradford, how many integrators do you see deploy a Dante network? And they never set up a second redundant network. And if they do, they're plugging him into the same switch, into a different VLAN on the same switch. And it's like, okay, well, how does this help you maintain your operation? You know, we just have not developed a culture in the AV community of bringing continuity to the forefront of thought. Right. And that's a whole discussion that needs to take place across the industry in making sure that we're fortifying this stuff and we're maintaining our customers' ability to conduct business. I think you see it more on the large deployments where they're putting redundant rings and redundant switch networks. But this is an everyday thing that needs to happen everywhere.
And I will say, while we're talking about Dante and digital audio transports, that is a slightly different situation than a computer getting malware.
Absolutely.
And the reason I say this is because if you go for full redundancy, all of a sudden a $5,000 AV system becomes a $10,000 AV system. And we as business people and as, you know, the shepherds of our clients' projects need to help them understand what's the risk to reward. A Dante network, you can go out and keep a cold spare of a switch that's already pre-configured, plug it in, and be backup.
Right.
And that might be acceptable. You could keep, you know, a mile of mil-spec fiber in the closet so you can run it between switches or between buildings when the backhoe cuts the cable between buildings. There are ways to not have to do the full redundancy but still have business continuity. And that's where we as a business and we as an industry have to help people make those decisions. It's really easy to say full redundancy, and then it's really hard to go, ooh, that's going to double your price. Now this means I can't use the same. You're not going to get a 4K image. You're going to get a 2K image. This is where we have to use our logic and our failure mode analysis and our failure trees, et cetera.
But that's the point, is you're at least having the discussion, right? You're having the discussion. The customer understands the risk. The user understands the risk at the end of the day. And they sign off on the dotted line and says, I assume this certain amount of liability as a result of my decision to go this path, right? The problem is that the vast majority of integrators that I've talked with don't even have those conversations, right? It's a one cable, one device, something fails, you know, they'll do an entire conference center with a single core or sound web processor, whatever they're going to use. And, you know, expect this entire conference center that's billing tens of thousands of dollars a day in rental to depend on that and never have the discussion with the owner about what the impact is if that device goes down and how to recover.
And to be clear and careful on this, this is one of those things that I think needs to be discussed in the CTS, CTSI, and CTSD course, because these are the new things that need to be discussed.
Absolutely.
The last time I took a test wasn't covered in there, but it's just as important as knowing the difference between an SDI cable and an AES3 cable.
Yep.
That'll be a good place to leave it, gentlemen. Thank you both so much. Mr. Michael Drainer, where do people find you or Drainer Technologies?
At Michael Drainer on Twitter or DrainerTech.com.
Very good. And Mr. Bradford Ben, thank you, sir, as always. Where can people find you?
You can find me on AV Nation. Go there to the website, see all the cool stuff we've done, all of the new stuff we have from Infocom. You also can find me on the Twitters, typically trolling Tim. About his Bears. I have to give up on the Blues for a little while. Yes, my Devils sucked.
Why do you have to give up on the Blues for a while?
because you won the, your team won the Stanley Cup for the first time ever.
You do with it.
And, you know, my Devils have won it more recently, but at least they got the first round pick this year for sucking so bad. So you can find me at avnation.tv. You can find me on the Twitters at Bradford Ben with two N's. You can find me at bradfordben.com. But please swing by the website at AVNation, see all the cool stuff we've gathered together. Some great podcasts, including this one. Well, okay, better podcasts than this one. You also can see the coverage we had from Infocom, including some great conversations with Dave Labuskas, as well as with myself and Michael Blackman. And I believe that Matt Scott was even there, as well as the elder statesman, Brock McGinnis. But also make sure to, you know, swing by, let our sponsors and underwriters know that you like the stuff we're doing. So obviously swing by the website to see the latest and best. And Tim, what are the newest shows that we've just launched?
The two newest ones we have, one is called Digital Signage Digest. It takes a look at the digital signage industry. And the other one is called Architect, though looking at the architecture and technology and how the two intersect. Yeah.
Sweet.
So, Bradford Dry, check all that out. Also, Bradford did everything for me, so I don't have to do anything. So all that and more at avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks so much for watching. That's all the time we have for ITAV.